This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
In an effort to make a rhetorical point, I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way, and I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
And Baylor is now 24-1. A 23-game win streak, the longest in the history of the Big 12, and they do it without one of their best players, Maceo Teague.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
All of a sudden, if the positive medical comes back, teams may be looking to trade up. Detroit at 3, the Giants at 4. So if you're Miami, you just sit there at 5 and wait it out? Maybe not. If you do that, you end up with Justin Herbert Oregon and lose out on Tua. Now, if they like Herbert better than Tua, they don't care. But if you like Tua, he's your guy. Being at 5 may not be good enough. You may have to jump up to that 4 spot or that 3 spot.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful hump day.
What is happening?
Not a whole lot, my man. Scratching and clawing, tooth and nail. Trying to find the cheapest airline ticket to Las Vegas I can.
Yeah, you're going to Vegas for a bachelor party, right?
Yeah. So I've been trying to book the ticket because it's coming up in just a couple months. It's a week after yours.
God, you're going to be a nightmare for 2 weeks.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's not good. I had that summer a couple of years back where I had to go, I think in a span of 3 weeks, I had to go to New Orleans for a bachelor party and then Lake Tahoe for a bachelor party. And it took a long time to recover.
Well, I have a strategy. I hate to admit this. I have a bit of a strategy here.
You're going to walk around with Pedialytes and water? What's the strategy?
No. So your bachelor party is in the Bend area.
Yes.
Perfect. It's a 3-hour drive. I know. Easy. I'm going to get hammered and we're going to have some shenanigans. Somebody's going to randomly pull out cocaine and everybody's going to go, what? What is this? Just kidding. But I know shenanigans will be had. Flying to Vegas could be dangerous in the second weekend of that. But I have an out of certain situations. So a big part of going to Vegas, I don't really know why. Maybe it's just because it's a generic thing to do. Okay. Maybe there's an interest of there that I don't know. But my buddy just, he's dead set. Vegas bachelor party, huge wedding. Like,
wow, he's doing it all in. Okay.
Real traditional stuff.
Okay. Has he been to Vegas before?
He's been to Vegas several times for work.
So he knows
and
about Vegas then.
He knows about Vegas, but his itinerary might be 2 pages long. I mean, throwing axes at wood, cars. Laser tag, casino, skydiving, Grand Canyon helicopter tour. He put it on there. And I'm like, look, I love you like you're my brother.
Yeah.
I'm not spending $6,000 on a bachelor party.
No.
And then a gift for your wedding.
Right. Not happening. I'm already flying. You're already flying somewhere.
Right.
You're paying for airline ticket. You're paying for a hotel.
Paying for a house.
Airbnb. So you're renting a house.
You got a big house. Yeah.
So that's a decent chunk of money.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention just the moving around money that you need for meals, for drinks, and for having a good time while you're in Vegas.
I'm probably going to be eating a lot of cheap cheeseburgers.
Yeah. You go to In-N-Out.
It's for 2 days.
Stuff.
Whatever.
Yeah. A little Shake Shack.
But one thing that he cut a lot off the list after we talked about it. was like, dude, nobody has the money for all this stuff.
Yeah, nobody wants it. And also, when you're in Vegas, like, you don't want to be strategized out for every minute of every day.
And that's who he is to his core,
yeah,
though.
It's like, no, man.
He's a planner to the minute and the second.
You got to peel that back. You want to have some time. Like, dude, let's just go meander from casino to casino for a couple hours.
Some pool time.
Let's go to the pool for a couple hours, right? Like, if you're mapping it out to every minute of every day, you're not going to have leftover time.
Is there a particular night that's the hardcore get it on Vegas drink till you can't? You better not plan anything before about 2 o'clock the next day.
So it's Saturday. Now here's the kicker. So we got him to cut his list down, and one thing he will not give up, he will not relinquish this. He is adamant. He wants to go to this club. There's like a club in Vegas. God. You know what do they call it? Tao or something.
Yeah.
I've never been to the clubs in Vegas.
Well, no, yes, you have. We went to a club in Vegas with Kevin Todd.
But our situation.
You stumbled around looking for a place to poop for like 2 hours.
No, I couldn't.
You did. Sprague left the club at like 1 o'clock, and everybody's like, where the hell did you go? Like, I don't know, man. He comes meandering back in at like 2:45.
I was hammered, and I had to pee. You couldn't go to that bathroom. I tried to go back to the room real quick. I got lost. Anyways.
Yeah. Caesar's is confusing. Sure.
I went to that club, but that was because we had somebody set it up for us,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they paid for everything. We didn't have to pay any money for that.
He wants to go to the club, and I looked it up, and the prices to get in these clubs is about $100 to $150 to sometimes $185 for dudes to get in on any given night. Women are free, of course, because you got to look, you put the boobs out, look sexy.
They want chicks in the club. Yes. They don't want a bunch of dudes. You don't want a sausage
party.
Right, right.
So I'm already like out on that idea. The fact that I'm 33, I'm married, I have two young girls. The last thing I want is to go to this club.
I don't think you got Vegas club wardrobe there in the house either.
Yeah, that's a whole nother look. You got any silk shirts?
No, I could probably put together the proper attire for it, but I just, what am I getting out of the club? I'm not dancing with anybody.
No, you're not getting anything out of it.
And much like we did in Vegas, although much different because of where we were sitting, it basically turns into you sitting for 2 to 3 hours and just staring at hot chicks, right?
Yeah.
That you're not going to talk to.
Yeah, about, that's it.
And
then
you're going to act like you know what your friend's saying while he's right next to you, but you can't hear a damn thing like, yeah. Nobody knows what they're saying.
Right.
So I also have a friend, it's his cousin's going, and he's one of my best friends, but he's a really religious guy. He's my out, because he's not going to the club.
It's like he's on a religious stance.
Yeah, he's
like,
you know, what am I, if you're religious, it's kind of against what you're going after,
sure.
Like be sitting there and looking at him.
Half naked women dancing,
I text him and I go, hey, are you going to the club? And he goes, no, actually I'm not. I know I might be the square. And I said, no, I'm going to use you. And me and you are going to hang out for a couple hours. We'll just meander down the strip and wait for them to get out of that club.
Let's go have a Bible study for a couple hours.
Whatever you want to do, I'm down.
Whatever you need, man. We'll meet up with them when they're done.
Let's have a real debate. Did Noah really get all the animals on that boat? Or were there like five animals and people couldn't believe that five animals got them? But my point is, I'm like doing the budget stuff. And you're right. With the airline, with the Airbnb.
It adds up, man.
With the food.
Adds up.
With the, I'm sure we're going to do some excursion thing.
Sure. You got to do some excursion.
I don't know.
There.
Something outside of the norms of typical Vegas.
Stay away from the helicopters, though.
Yeah.
Let's not do that right now.
One went down in Hawaii, Kobe.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Nope.
I'm out. But so I've been trying to cut down the budget, and I don't know if this is really like a sinful thing to admit on the airwaves, but I'm using my religious friend and me and him are going to hang out.
You got to use whatever you can, man. Whatever card you got in your back pocket to get out of stuff. I remember when we were in New Orleans for the bachelor party, I had a certain budget in mind of what I wanted to, like, all right, here's kind of where I'm looking to spend over this weekend.
Because New Orleans, I fancy, is not a cheap situation.
I mean, it's a lot cheaper than Vegas. I'll grant you that.
Really? Like flying there?
I'm actually telling you, man, New Orleans, for those who haven't been to New Orleans, I might be outside of now, like the golf angle for Vegas is always going to be there. The only thing that New Orleans doesn't have that Vegas has is the gambling aspect. So if you're into the gambling, you want to play craps, blackjack, that kind of thing, then Vegas is your town and there's no better place to go. But if you're just going to party and have a good time and like hit the town and do some drinking and bar hopping and that kind of stuff, New Orleans blows Vegas out of the water. It's not even close to my
mind. How different is the flights there?
price-wise. The flights are far more expensive, that's for sure, and it's a lot longer of a flight.
So you go from 2 to 400.
So you weigh that in a little bit as well. But, I mean, you're just bar hopping. The vast majority of bars I went to in New Orleans didn't have a cover on them, so you just kind of stumble in from one bar to the next. There's a different DJ or a different band in every single one along Bourbon Street. So that aspect was, I thought, a lot better in Vegas. But I remember even there having this budget in mind of what I wanted to spend. And like the first night or like the second morning we were there, or first morning, I remember going to get some cash out of an ATM and like checking the amount in the account. And I'm like, oh, God.
I've already passed the budget.
Oh, we're in a little bit of trouble here. I got to tighten up the belt over the next couple of days.
Did you pass it by a lot?
No, I wasn't quite there yet, but I just had like, all right, here's how much I want to spend every day. And then you get out on Bourbon Street and you're not paying attention to anything. You wake up the next morning and it's like, all right, let's see where I'm at. Oh, God. It's going to be a long couple of days.
Hey, guys, I'm out on the beignets. I'm out.
No, I'm not going to go out to breakfast this morning, guys. I'm okay.
McDonald's has got a McMuffin for about $1. I'm in on that.
Yeah, the budget's like, it's just, the timing of it is very interesting with yours and his wedding. And it's like everything seems to be back to back. I think your wedding dates are back to back. I think your bachelor parties are back to back.
Just right there. Boom, boom.
Yeah. So I've been dealing with the budget stuff today and big group chats of, hey, should you fly Spirit Airlines? They're really cheap.
Find a cheap airline to get there.
But then they charge $50 for any bag.
Right.
Their pilots are training pilots.
Right. Not a lot of trustworthiness there.
I asked you if you'd ever heard of Sun Country Air.
Never heard of it in a million years.
Me either.
Yeah.
Sounds like an arena sponsor.
Sure. Anybody want to pitch them? Well, they want to sponsor the show. Bring it on. Jeep Airlines. Let's go. Well, that's why I'm going to tell everybody at my bachelor party, too. And I know you've fought this, but I'm going to mandate it. Like, if you're coming to the bachelor party, please don't get me a gift.
Yeah.
I don't want anything.
Yeah. Like you're going to get gifts, though, right?
I know. I'm sure that
it's going to happen.
But I'm still going to try and mandate it as strong as I can, because you're spending a couple $100 to rent the Airbnb. We're going to go golfing. There's going to be these are expensive trips and they add up. And I don't want people to spend like $500-$600 for a weekend and then go on top and buy another gift. Like, the gift is coming and hanging out for a weekend and having a good time. That's all the gift that I need. No gifts if you're coming to the bachelor party.
Yeah, tell like your best friend and your brother get you like the most heartfelt kick-ass male gift of all time, and everybody else in that room of like, how many people are gonna be there? 20
at the bachelor party. 20, yeah.
Of the 20 people, two give you these awesome gifts and you're moved to tears and it's emotional, and the other 18 are just like,
oh, no, please, hold on.
I didn't get you anything.
There are no bachelor party gifts. I'm saying at the wedding.
Oh.
I'm saying if you're coming to the wet, like, if
I got you a gift already.
Damn it. Just defeated the whole purpose of this talk, this conversation.
I thought you were talking about the bachelor party.
No, who brings a gift to a bachelor party?
Guys do like cigars or nice bottles of booze. Like, they do nice gifts like that, right? Am I wrong on that?
No, that's not unprecedented.
That's kind of normal, right?
Usually, though, it's just picking up drinks or whatever for you as you go along.
He doesn't pay for a meal or drink.
Right. That's what it is. Like, hey, we'll get Dirt's drinks tonight. That kind of thing.
Don't worry. I'll be the guy that shows up in Bend with a truck full of groceries. Guys, are we cooking in tonight? Is that the move? Or
I got some chicken in the back.
Who gets your breakfast burrito in the morning when you're trying to work off last night's booze?
Wait, I don't think we need to go to the brewery again.
No. Just stay right here. I got you.
Oh, I love being cheap. It's so funny. All right, we got a good show today. We got two stops on the Daily Ticker. We've got Statter Story at 2:15, a lot to get to. We're going to start in the quarterback conversation in the NFL, because a lot is moving. There's pieces here with different quarterbacks and their destinations. We'll start there. We have two stops on the Daily Ticker. One is in Cleveland to talk about the John Beilein thing, and the second is in Detroit. Are the Lions really going to be the favorites to land Tua out of Alabama? That is what Caesar Sportsbook is saying. So we'll make those two stops. And then Joe Burrow maybe holding the Bengals leverage here a little bit, despite what Tyler Dragon told us last week. Maybe there's some smoke to this fire. So we'll start with NFL quarterbacks. Dirt and Sprague with you. Happy hump day on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. 12:15 on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
By the way, mistaken. I just didn't experience it when I was there. New Orleans apparently does have casinos as well.
I was going to actually ask, are you sure about the casino thing?
I just didn't go to any. We were Bourbon Street and we did a gator tour like in the swamps, which was the coolest thing I've ever done.
Am I wrong in putting the riverboat casino stuff in New Orleans?
Now, see, I thought it was more in, like, Mississippi, down on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, I thought so, too. But we had a couple of texts and a tweet saying they're in New Orleans.
Maybe. Okay.
The boats or just casinos in general?
Maybe casinos.
In general, okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I always attach boat casinos with Missouri, Mississippi, yeah. New Orleans.
Biloxi,
yeah.
The craziest thing, too, about New Orleans was, like, right outside, because Bourbon Street is where we spent most of our time, which was, like, gross but fun at the same time. It amazed me that if you go like two blocks in the opposite direction, just in any way, like away from Bourbon Street, you're in like classy, elegant New Orleans. Mm. Like there's like nice, like 5-star restaurants and nice jazz clubs and like ritzy people in suits drinking, you know, fancy drinks. You're like, but like two blocks away, there's like 21-year-olds who are passing out and keeling over railings and throwing beads at naked women. And two blocks this way, you have a nice, fine establishment. It's a hell of a place, man.
Yeah, I have to visit, man. It's on the bucket list. You know, one thing I think we both, and I'm kind of running with this conclusion, it feels like both of us are kind of enamored or at least really into following the quarterback news.
Without a doubt, it's going to be a fun QB draft this year.
Well, not only the draft, but I think the mix of the draft with the veterans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The what team is trying to go all in and salvage maybe a veteran quarterback and win now versus the team that just says, nah, we're not close. We have to go with a young guy. I'll give you a good example, I would say, is the Chargers. Do the Chargers really want Tom Brady, right? They're reportedly one of the teams in on the Brady sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. Are the Chargers better off going for Tom Brady for a year or two and probably selling more tickets and putting his face on billboards and, you know, seeing all the pictures out there and also saying, hey, we have really good wide receivers. Our defense is okay. We were just in the divisional round 2 years ago. Or are they better suited to go, we feel like we have good pieces, but they're still young and we can build them up alongside with a young quarterback like, for example, Justin Herbert.
Right. If you want to draft one just outside the top 10 or maybe trade up and draft a quarterback.
Detroit, which is a ticker stop we're going to make. I think I find them to be very interesting. Like, do you keep going with Matt Stafford and say, well, we have to win this year. The coaching staff's gone, which I always hate that because then what are the odds the coach is really going to be much better? Or do you punt on it? You trade Stafford. And you say, you know what? We're going young. We're going to go rebuild, and we're going to hope that this rebuild is truly the start of something special, whereas the last 80 years in Detroit, it's meant almost nothing outside of Barry Sanders.
Right. You have no history there. You haven't been able to win. And for both, I would argue, the Chargers have a stronger argument for trying to go for it, but what holds them back is the team that's in the division, right? Does Tom Brady put them over the top over Kansas City?
I personally think at this point of his career, no. Right? I just don't think Tom Brady is worth the gamble there.
Is there any quarterback out there in the open market, whether you trade for Cam Newton, whether you're going after somebody else, Ryan Tannehill might be available, that's going to put you over the top to beat Kansas City?
Yeah.
And to me, the answer is no. I almost feel like the last handful of years in the NBA, teams have had a weird strategy of how do we deal with this with Golden State? Because you don't know how long they're going to be around. You're trying to, in some cases, build up to beat them, but you realize you're not going to be able to compile the talent to beat them. So do you build for the future? There's a lot of teams that are kind of in that stuck between. And I feel
like Portland's kind of
Portland
one of
was
them
one
too.
Of those prime examples of like, what do you do? Like, you're never going to be good enough to beat Golden State. Now we'll see what the future holds in the NBA, and it's going to change going forward. But I feel like at least for one more year, that's Kansas City. Now, in a year from now, we're going to have a conversation about Mahomes and how much is he making and what does that mean for the rest of the roster. And then that whole conversation becomes, I think, more even about can you overcome Kansas City if it's Mahomes but less talent around him because of the money that he's making. But he's got one more year left on his rookie deal, man. Mm-hmm. Like, that team is largely going to be the same again next year. And Tom Brady at his age or any other, you know, open market quarterback that comes to the Chargers, I'm not going to put them above Kansas City. So I would argue in both cases, the strategy is smart just to you know, roll the dice and start over. See what you can land in a quarterback in the draft. Whether you're Detroit, you take Tua number three, or maybe you trade back a couple of picks and you take Herbert because somebody wants to move up. There's no winning path right now for me with the Chargers or with the Lions. And if there's not a winning path, sometimes it's best to start over a little bit.
But did you happen to see what Derrick Henry said? He was on a podcast. I think it's Taylor Lewan, his teammate or maybe former teammate, is doing a podcast, Barstool or somebody in a bus. And Derrick Henry was one of the guests. I think it was yesterday, the day before. And they basically said, what are your thoughts on the Titans going after Tom Brady? Because the Titans are also one of those teams. And he paused for about 2-3 seconds. And he just goes, what's the difference between him and Ryan Tannehill? Now, 4 years ago, that's a laughable thing to say, right? Like, really? It's crazy it seems to say that because of the name recognition.
Yeah, I don't disagree with it that much.
I don't think he's off. I think he might be right. In fact, I would be more inclined to want to go Tannehill for a slightly cheaper number.
Sure.
Maybe open things, and Derrick Henry might be speaking from his own standpoint here because he wants a big contract. But is there really a difference for people between Ryan Tannehill and Tom Brady of today? Because even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Tom Brady was a different quarterback to me. And he didn't have any good weapons in New England. But I also don't think he was all that spectacular. And is it going to get better as he gets older? No, it's going to get worse. So
right. And does Tennessee have better weapons than New England had? I mean, they got a couple
of
good
young
pieces.
Wide receivers. That's what they have going for
them.
Let's
not act like that's the best core of wide receivers in the NFL.
Right. So I think it's easy to see or hear that kind of stuff and like scoff at it and go, what? You idiot. He's not wrong. I really don't think there's much difference between Ryan Tannehill and Tom Brady. And how teams weigh their decisions on this stuff going forward, I'm going to be very interested to see like who is really all in, like the Raiders. Right, we haven't talked at all about the Raiders. No. The Raiders reportedly are going all in, and they want Tom in Vegas. And, you know, I get it. Tom would sell out. I happen to think they'd sell out anyway because they're a new team in a new city. But Tom would sell out, pair him with Gruden. That's can't-miss television. Mm-hmm. What are you doing with Derek Carr? Derek Carr doesn't want to be a backup.
No, you would move him. You would move him somewhere else.
He was a borderline MVP candidate until he broke his ankle a few years ago. So teams like that. Like, what are you trying to accomplish? Is Tom Brady going to win you the Super Bowl next year? Is he really that coveted? This isn't Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning going on free agency was risky because it was a neck injury. We didn't know. Yeah. But I think instantly, as soon as he stepped on that field for Denver, you could see he was physically okay. Tom Brady's old. There's not like a healing process for that. In fact, the longer you wait, the worse it gets because you get older.
Right.
I just don't view this Tom Brady sweepstakes stuff and think, well, franchises should be selling out their future for 1 or 2 years with a guy who is an absolute legend in name, but he's not what he was 5, 6 years ago.
No, he's not. And the Raider problem, I think, is the same one that I just brought up with the Chargers. I mean, I think Oakland drafted, or I guess you got to start calling it Vegas. The Raiders drafted well last year with their 3 first-round picks. Abrams got hurt and he didn't play. I think he got hurt in the opener, missed the rest of the year. But Jacobs had a really solid rookie season, an incredible story. And Farrell, I thought, came on as the year went on a little bit. So they got young talent. Maybe there's a future there. But again, in the short term, Tom Brady has let's just give him the most generous example. 2 years left, right? Like two years of playing good. Like,
sure.
No, I'm not going to give him more than
2.
And I think most realistic people would say maybe he's got one more year of playing solid football left in the tank. Are you going to beat Kansas City in the AFC? Now, I guess the counter argument.
Well, don't forget
the
NFC teams too.
Well, sure. And I guess the counter argument is injuries can happen and maybe Mahomes goes down and the thing opens up and you got Tom Brady and now you're ready made to go past them if something like that happens. But you're banking on an injury at that point. I don't think Brady puts the Chargers or the Chiefs over the top. You know, I think there could be an argument made for some of these teams potentially getting a veteran as long as they're still planning for the future. I think that's the main argument here that I'm trying to make is that there has to be a backup plan. There has to be a plan B. Like if you're the Chargers, if you're the Raiders, and you say, you know what, we think in the next 2 years we have a roster that can win a championship. Let's see what we got with Tom Brady. That's fine. Whatever. You want to roll the dice? I disagree. I don't think he can win, but let's see if you roll the dice. You got to make sure there's that backup plan, because if you don't, then you're just setting yourself back another 2 years and then trying to identify who your quarterback is. You're going through the same exact problem.
Right.
Like the Lions have been bad for a long time. We can all agree on that. When was the last time they had a top 3 pick? Been a while.
Yeah,
right? Like
I mean, top 10, I'd say top 10 all the time.
Sure,
but top
you don't
three.
Land a top 3 pick very often. So you want to make sure you don't blow this. The Giants were the last team that kind of did this, and they took Saquon Barkley instead of a quarterback, and they would probably argue it worked out for them because they landed Daniel Jones, and maybe he's the guy going forward. They had to have back-to-back top 5 picks, though, in order to make that happen. And so if you're Detroit and you don't take a quarterback, Stafford plays, you're probably not going to end up with a top 5 pick next year if he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. Again, then you're punting on that decision and you're missing a chance to potentially grab somebody who could be a game changer.
Well, you use a team like the Lions. Do the Lions draft Tua and then they still sit with Stafford and say Tua's going to sit for 2 years and get healthy and learn from Stafford? And how does Matt Stafford react to that? And does that actually, is it benefit you to do that? The cost... The risk analysis on this stuff for general managers has got to be really tough, because on one side, you totally get, go take Tua. You have the next franchise guy behind the much older and veteran franchise guy, and you'll be ready in 2 years if Stafford walks away or is kind of done with it because you're not winning. On the flip side, what if Matt Stafford has one of his best years this coming season? Nobody sees it coming.
He stays healthy.
And you used your third pick on a quarterback who's not playing.
But then you have
instead of a player who might contribute, a la, and I know it's the easy example right now, but Nick Bosa with the Niners.
Yeah, to have an immediate impact. I get that, but I still feel like you're then at least going to battle from a position of strength if you have multiple of what everybody covets. Like this conversation is funny that you have it every offseason about quarterbacks, and it's why teams are so overpaying for guys. It's because how many of these teams are out there on the open market looking for a quarterback every year, whether it be in free agency or whether it be through the draft, right? It is the hot commodity in the NFL, and it's very difficult to win if you don't have one. And if you're the Lions and that situation plays out, guess what? You got Stafford who's still playing at a high level. Maybe his contract's easier to move going forward, or you got Tua. You can trade one of them if that ends up being the case, but you're dealing from a position of strength, not, you know, passing up an opportunity to land that guy. Stafford gets hurt, you have another bad season, and then you're back in the same spot next offseason.
Patrick Mahomes is 24, right?
24.
Let me ask you this. I need you to answer very quickly because we got the ticker. Nick Wright on First Things First a couple days ago, I just saw this yesterday, he made a suggestion that he would be A-OK if the Kansas City Chiefs signed Patrick Mahomes to a six-year, $210 million deal, which would average out around 35 a year, fully guaranteed.
I'd be okay with that.
We're headed there, aren't we?
I would be okay with
that. Why would you not if you're Kansas City?
Yeah, to save $5 million or maybe more per season to give him a fully guaranteed
contract.
Because
you add those up, he's saving you what, $30, $35, $40 million over the lifetime of that deal, not going to $40 million?
Yeah, some people seem to think he might be able to get $45.
Yeah, maybe he will. Maybe that's what he's looking for. But I thought that was an interesting dynamic because that'd be something we've never seen in the NFL. $210 fully guaranteed.
You could save $10 million a year, though, to go spend on a on a left tackle or a wide receiver.
It's a win-win for both sides.
It really is.
All right, good quarterback conversation. Let's go to the Daily Ticker now. John Beilein out after 54 days with Cleveland after a five-year deal to be the new head coach. What's going on there? And Detroit, are they really the favorites to land Tua? Both those stops in the Daily Ticker next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Daily Ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Our first stop is in Cleveland, where John Beilein and the Cavs have parted ways. He's leaving on the table $12 million, 54 games into a five-year contract, and it's already over in Cleveland. James Rapine is joining us now, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, columnist and host on their station. He's on Twitter, at James Rapine. James, thanks for hopping on in Portland with us, man. I read your article on the Beilein thing. I read the Athletic article on the Beilein thing. It's wild. Like, it's not that it's shocking a coach doesn't work coming from college to the NBA. I think it's more in the manner in which this all just unraveled so quickly into a five-year deal.
Yeah, extremely quick. I mean, some of the details provided by the Athletic in the preseason, I mean, because of injuries and lack of practice time, and it's just things that are normal in everyday NBA life. Kevin Love not playing on back-to-backs. Well, that's, given his injury history, that's probably something you could have seen from a mile away. So I was kind of shocked that Beilein was surprised by these things in NBA lifestyle, or the fact that he didn't have a plan to adjust his system to it. It is shocking that it was such a short-lived run here in Cleveland.
Well, how do the fans feel about this? Because it's just such a unique organization that has been bad for so long, but then you have the LeBron eras mixed in there and a championship in the last handful of years, and now seemingly back to the old ways of doing things. Just how do the fans feel about all this stuff going on?
Yeah, I think they're almost indifferent with Beilein because there was never high expectations for this team. And they're on the border and they're on the verge, you're right. Without LeBron, they've been a bad organization. And so they need to find a way to build a winning culture outside of LeBron James. They couldn't do it when he left for 4 years when he went to Miami, and they're struggling to do it now. So I think fans, I don't want to say they're apathetic yet, but I think that's the the dangerous territory that the Cavs now find themselves in. I mean, guys, they're on their fourth coach now with J.B. Bickerstaff. It's not official, but it will be official later today. Fourth coach since October of 2018. That's wild to me.
Yeah. James Rapine is our guest, 92.3 The Fan over there in Cleveland, our sister station, as the Cavaliers are parted ways 54 days after hiring John Beilein and a five-year contract. You know, I guess part of this, too, when you read your piece of it seems like he came to the NBA having no idea how the NBA works, which is just mind-numbing because I feel like a casual fan can understand maybe some culture in the NBA. And it seems like he thought college would just translate straight to what he did from Michigan into Cleveland. But I'm also kind of looking at the broader spectrum here of the franchise. And aside from this being an S show and Kobe Altman getting this and them going through multiple coaches, you know, if LeBron doesn't decide to return and win a championship, where the hell is this franchise right now? And do you think Gilbert ends up selling it at some point had LeBron never returned?
Maybe. I mean, that's certainly something that you could go down. I would say this, that they wouldn't be well run, that six coaches in 7 years would be a even higher number. You wouldn't have the finals appearances. You probably wouldn't even have playoff appearances because they showed no signs, you know, because you walk into a Kyrie Irving. I mean, that's easy first overall. Yeah. You think back on it. You walked into LeBron James first overall, but when they haven't gotten the first pick, and even times when they did, Anthony Bennett, they got it wrong. So it is a really tough spot if you're a Cavs fan to be in because you had those good years and now you're looking at it and you're wondering where the hope is. And here's the other thing that's alarming to me, guys. When you look at this Cavaliers organization, Dan Gilbert had to okay the Andre Drummond trade. He has to sign off on all of the Cavaliers' moves. And I can't think of an organization in pro sports, and maybe you guys can, where the owner is signing off on the GM's moves, where they're considered a well-run organization, a contender, right, an organization with good culture. And so I think it starts there with Dan. And it trickles its way down.
Yeah, and looking over everybody's shoulder is never a good thing. I did want to get one quick one in about Kevin Love. His name has been connected with Portland, obviously, growing up here, and the Blazers and him, they're rumored, you know, the deadline, nothing happened. Just what do you think the future holds for him? I think he's got two more years left on that deal. How does it play out in Cleveland?
He's actually got three after this year.
Okay. So
it's 3 years, over $90 million left on that contract. So I think the Cavaliers will certainly look to move him this offseason. He's probably a little happier with Beilein out and a guy like J.B. Bickerstaff in, someone who at least has some kind of NBA history, you know, has been around the game and understands it. That being said, I still think he ends up elsewhere this offseason. And the value, that's the question here. Will Kobe Altman be willing to take less than he views Love at? Because he values Love. He thinks he's still an asset. And we saw around the league that teams do not, including the Trailblazers, view him that way, considering the contract and how much money he has left on that deal.
Yeah, Cleveland fan probably happy that it's almost baseball season now as the Browns are disappointing, and here we are with the Cavs firing their coach after a five-year deal, 54 games, or parting ways, I should say. James Rapine, 92.3, The Fan in Cleveland. He got a good article on this on their website. Go check it out, and he's on Twitter, @JamesRapine. James, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for stopping in and filling us in on what's going on in Cleveland.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from James Rapine in Cleveland. Let's go to Justin Rogers in Detroit. Detroit News covering the Detroit Lions. The rumor is the Caesars Sportsbook has Tua in Detroit. Detroit is the co-favorite to land Tua in the draft. We'd heard rumblings about this, but it was shot down, and now it's changed a little bit with the sportsbook. So Justin Rogers hops on. Justin, thanks for joining us in Portland, man. Just kind of your overall feeling or thoughts on Caesars making Detroit the co-favorite to land Tua Tagovailoa.
Well, anytime Vegas chimes in and the numbers are a little off, it gets you to think twice. But, you know, this is something I'm still struggling to come to grips with. I think that maybe Vegas here in this instance is buying into some of the smoke screens that the Lions are sending out. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in a situation where the general manager and coach nearly lost their jobs at the end of the last season and have been told you need to win immediately if you want to keep your jobs next season.
Yeah, rookie quarterbacks don't often do that. And I hope I'm not putting you in a tough spot, but I'm curious if you can explain the Stafford contract to us. I mean, we've seen some rumblings about that when the whole trade stuff popped up. Like, he's got a crazy amount owed, and whether he's on the roster or not, it's a huge cap hit. Like, just how does that thing work and maybe keep them from potentially drafting somebody and moving on from Stafford?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Stafford obviously is still in the midst of a massive extension he signed a couple years ago. And as it stands currently, he's due to have a cap hit a little bit bigger than $21 million next year. They did a restructure at the end of last season. They converted a little bit of his base salary and a little bit of a roster bonus that's due next year into bonuses that could be spread across, you know, multiple years. But if they trade him, the cap hit goes up to $24 million. So it actually costs more to get rid of Matthew Stafford than to keep him on your roster for season. And if you're talking about Tagovailoa in this instance, you're talking about a guy that probably not going to throw out and start right away as he recovers from this hip injury. So, you know, I don't think trading Stafford makes a whole lot of sense either. If they did go that route, I think they would keep both of them for a year, very similar to the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes situation in Kansas City a couple years back. Yeah.
Justin Rogers is our guest covering the Detroit Lions for the Detroit News. He's on Twitter at Justin_Rogers. Give him a follow for all things Lion related. Look, I'm not going to pretend to know, so I'm going to ask you this question, and this is going to be started with just an opinion. I personally don't find it helpful or ever really working where an owner basically says you have 1 year or you're fired for a coaching staff. What is the clear plan for Detroit here? Do you realistically think that they can compete next year within the division or in the NFC with the roster that they appear to have right now?
Yeah, you know, I think you look at where they were at the midpoint of last season. They were 3-4-1. They lost a heartbreaker in prime time to the Green Bay Packers, where there was a phantom fans, hands of the face call mm-hmm. that kind of swayed that game. They lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in the fourth quarter, blowing a late lead, and they were hammering the Arizona Cardinals in the opener before giving up an 18-point lead in the fourth quarter where, you know, they probably should have won that game. So you're really looking at a team that could have easily been 6-2 at the break with Matthew Stafford. So you go out and you add a good defensive piece at three and maybe even pick up a contributor in that top of the second round. You spend your free agency money and you go out and you sign a guy that can make an impact right away. And maybe you flip a bunch of those close losses into victories. Can they do a worst of first turnaround? I think it's absolutely possible. I'm certainly not going to call it likely, but I think it's something that's realistic. And listen, whether ownership said it or not, you knew this was going to be a one-year fix-it or go situation. You know, it's just now ownership has actually stated what the situation is more than anything.
Does Matt Patricia actually use the pencils or just for looks?
No, he definitely used it. It's a big thing for him.
Big thing. Okay.
Any reason it's a pencil? Is it just because he doesn't want you race it? Is that all?
You know, I think it just goes back to his note-taking days as an engineer more than anything.
There we go. Justin Rogers, Detroit News, covering the Lions, the rumor of them wanting Tua. He's not so convinced on that one, but Vegas makes these kind of moves, and as he mentions, everybody starts to kind of wonder and panic a little bit, and we get the latest in Detroit from Justin Rogers on Twitter, at Justin_Rogers. Justin, thanks so much for hopping on in Portland and giving us the lowdown in Detroit, man.
Hey, no problem.
There we go. Good stuff. Good stops on the Daily Ticker. James Rapine in Cleveland on John Beilein and the Cleveland Cavaliers parting ways after 54 games. And Justin Rogers from the Detroit News on the Lions. Are they really interested in Tua? He seems to think no, because it costs too much to trade Matt Stafford.
Yeah, but Vegas usually doesn't buy in unless there's some actual fire there. You know, like that's like I get media members and articles getting written and radio hosts, all that kind of stuff. I see all of us falling for the smokescreen being set up, but Vegas falling for it to make Detroit the co-favorite to land him, that to me is a different conversation. And the Beilein one, man, that's one of those moves where I wish you could ask him too, like, what were you thinking?
Well, let's talk about that.
Did you think it was going to work out?
54 games and a five-year deal and he's done? We have to jump into this one because I think it's much deeper than John Beilein. We'll get to that next on The Fan. We'll get to the Joe Burrow stuff coming up here at the top of the hour. Then the NCAA is suddenly super okay with people transferring and not being penalized for a year. It's always funny how they're 5-10 years apart. And then they catch up to everybody else and they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, yeah, we suggested it a decade ago. Thank you. It's a weird situation in Cleveland. It's one of those, you know, Portland's not perfect. And, yeah, they've won a championship more recently. But let's take LeBron away. And that franchise is absolute garbage dumpster.
Yeah, they've done nothing.
Basically my entire life.
I think the entire history of the organization outside of a couple of years when they got bounced by Jordan in the playoffs. Like what the first round
right, Cavaliers teams?
What else have the Cavs accomplished over the years that I'm forgetting?
Prior to LeBron James, the two coolest things about the Cleveland Cavaliers for my entire existence, like of actually seeing and knowing what's going on in sports, has been that Terrell Brandon played for them and was an all-star.
He was.
And that they drafted Dwan Wagner, who I loved coming out of Memphis.
That's a throwback name.
Right, but he didn't, you know, he got injured. It didn't last very long. But that's about it. And then LeBron came and suddenly things changed. Dan Gilbert got this ego like, oh, we know what we're doing. You won one championship, and it was only because LeBron came back and felt guilty and wanted to win one more on his own. But now they've parted ways with John Beilein after 54 games. It's a five-year deal. He's giving up $12 million to leave. The Athletic story, look, James Rapine's is really good. The Athletic story has a little more deep dive, just a little more sourcing. And it's kind of funny. Like, one player talked to John Beilein about leaving and said, but yeah, but you can't. I mean, you're not really going to leave. You don't want to leave all that money. Beilein told the player, yeah. Mental happiness is better than money. It's money isn't everything.
He was miserable.
And he's going to have his pick of the litter in college. I mean, any job that opens up, he's going to put his name in there, and he'll be at least a finalist for it, so he'll be okay.
Yeah, he went on a great run at Michigan before taking that job.
But he also seems very stupid in the way that he viewed the NBA or at least approached the NBA as a coach.
Yeah, you have to be willing to adapt. It's a completely different game from college. It's mostly managing egos and personalities and keeping everybody happy and content. And it's a job that's just not for some. That's why a lot of coaches have just stuck around the college ranks and not wanted to make that jump. And it's why I asked going into the break, if you're Beilein, man, Beilein was 2 years removed from making it to a national title game at Michigan. They lost. Who'd they lose to? Is it Louisville? They lost.
Yeah, they lost to Louisville. Who it was. I think that was the, wasn't that one of the seasons where they had the brothel houses going? It was
probably
right before they got penalized for it.
Didn't
they have to vacate
title?
That title?
I think that was 2017.
Yeah. I think that was part of their punishment was they had to vacate the title.
Sounds about right. So, I mean, he had a really good thing going to Michigan. The next year they went into the Sweet 16. They might have lost to Oregon that year, actually. But he was a great coach in college. And if you're going to go to the next level, one, I get that money is a big deal, so he's probably chasing a payday. But there's two aspects of going to the NBA. One, you should make sure that you understand what the job entails and how different it is from the college game. So you know that you have to change a lot of the things that you do and the way you operate. And then the other one is, like, if you're going to jump from a program that had gone to four straight tournament appearances, a national title, multiple Sweet 16s, a good, solid foundational tournament or a program to an NBA team, don't you want to make sure the NBA team knows what the hell they're doing?
Yeah.
And what about Cleveland outside of, again, a couple of years of LeBron? But even then, I don't want to give him credit for that. They walked into, as he just said, to LeBron, and LeBron only came back because he felt bad about leaving and he wanted to win a title. Like, he shouldn't have gone back the way that they treated him after he left. They burned his jersey.
After that letter, it would have been hard for me to do
that. Dan Gilbert writes
the
letter. Like, he had no business going back there, but he did, and he took him back to the finals for four straight years, and they won another championship. Outside of that, that organization's one of the worst in all of sports. It always has been. Like, what do you think? You're going to walk in there and not change the way you coach and just fix the Cleveland Cavaliers?
You know, how aware do you think ownership is in sports? Because it is very funny to me. You see these organizations that are constantly crappy.
They're the same.
Washington, Detroit in the NFL.
The New York Knicks,
the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, largely they are consistent with sucking.
Yeah, the Suns.
And yet, they just keep firing GMs. They fire a coach. Like, Earl Watson, five games in, you're fired.
Like, it's
John Beilein, 54 games in. Yeah. Sure, you had a bad approach to this whole thing, but you're fired. Yeah. It's like there's no self-awareness that it's an ownership thing, right? Like, Paul Allen. I think Paul Allen and Portland are a great example of this. Paul Allen buys the team, kind of stays out of the way. They have this great group of talent. They make these finals runs. Then Paul Allen gets that taste of winning. Keeps teams that are talented, consistent, makes some good moves. Bob Whitsitt makes good moves. They get really close. It drives Paul Allen even more. And then they start taking gambles that are very unnecessary. Fat Sean Kemp.
Right.
Right?
There's too many to count. Sebastian Telfair.
You know, you name them. Quintel Woods. You name them. They got them. And then what happened with Paul Allen after a few GMs? Kind of steps back. He allows Neil Olshey to do his thing, make the draft picks, while still being attached to it. He's a great example of it, of, hey, you know, you were winning when you were like a little hands off, right? And when you were really hands on, it got ugly. Owners don't realize this. And it blows my mind that these guys can be billionaire people or 100 millionaires and not figure this out yet. Like Dan Snyder, he kept Bruce Allen around for like 10 years. What did Bruce Allen do for you that was positive in any way? Right. Nothing. But let's fire Jay Gruden. Let's right. fire this GM. Let's fire that next head coach. Dude, look in the mirror. You can't have all this business acumen and then come into a different thing and suddenly not realize that you're the problem. It's amazing to me.
It's mind-boggling,
how
man.
Stupid some of these super successfully rich people are.
Yeah, it's all ego. It's having people around you that won't tell you what you need to hear. Like, we were just joking before the show. This is a different analogy, but I want to connect the two. Antonio Brown came out with a rap song today.
Oh, God, do not Google it. Do not just, Google it.
Don't Google it. Don't do it. We'll sum it up for
it's
you.
It's called Andrew Luck. Why? I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense. We listen to it because, yeah, research. You know, we got to do research for the yeah. show. So, but we our immediate thought was, A, like, how does nobody stop this? Is there not anybody around him to tell him that this is a terrible idea, that this music sucks, that you're making a joke of yourself, and that everybody's going to make fun of you for this? And the answer is no. I mean, they don't have those kind of people around him. He doesn't have somebody around him to smack him around and say, dude, stop. Like, this is dumb. Why are you making a rap song? Figure your ass out and get back to the NFL. And the same thing goes with these owners, man. They just don't have people around them that can stand up to them, that can talk back to them, that can, you know, hey, look in the mirror. A lot of this is your fault. The Cavs under Dan Gilbert have been awful. Again, outside of LeBron James, they walked into it. They've walked into it with Kyrie Irving. Outside of that, they have no business winning. And again, they're screwing something up. Made a bad hire initially, getting a college coach who was unwilling to change, throwing a lot of money at him. And then 50 games in, you fire him. It just doesn't make any damn sense,
man. I mean, I'm trying to find out how much Dan Gilbert bought the Cavs for. Because I'm thinking right now, even without LeBron and them being as terrible as they are, you're probably getting $1 billion for the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? So I think there's the element with really rich people like that. There's an element that you absolutely have to acknowledge of saying, well, when you get to $1 billion as a human being, there's got to be a part of you just right. instinctually of, yeah, you can't tell me what to do. That's right. Right. I just made $1 billion.
Right. I have $1 billion in my bank account.
In the same way, like Dan Gilbert bought the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I'll have to find it during the break, but he buys the Cleveland Cavaliers. Well, now they're worth $1 billion in large part because of LeBron.
Yeah. I'm not giving Dan Gilbert sure. any credit
but
for
let's,
that.
I'll just throw a number out before
it's all LeBron James.
But if he bought the team for $500 million,
right. He's made
a ton of money. Half of $1 billion. Yeah. So while it looks bad on the court and you're not winning and your fans don't care, at the end of the day, Dan Gilbert goes, well, I made a $500 million investment
yeah.
that returns a $500 million.
Yeah, they're making a ton of money, man.
So you're making so much money, like in the NFL too.
Well, we just went through this with James Dolan, man. We just rambled on about James Dolan like last week. Who was the most valuable NBA franchise?
It's the Knicks.
It doesn't matter that
he
they
could probably
sucked.
Sell that team for $6 billion tomorrow.
They've been awful for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
They're irrelevant on the NBA landscape, and they can't mm-hmm. even convince free agents to go sign there anymore because they're so bad, and they're worth nearly $5 billion. It doesn't matter. So it's a similar analogy of it. Just for some of these guys, it doesn't matter what they do. The evaluation's always going to be there.
Yeah.
They just view it as a business too. I mean, Dan Gilbert, I'm sure wants to
win. If you view it
as
a business, you get the hell out of the way and you start trying to treat it like a business. Look at Golden right. State. Can hate them all you want, but they moved to San Francisco because they know they get more money. They now sold out their new arena. They're willing to pay the luxury tax because at the end of all this dirt, at the end of the day with Clay, Dre, and Steph, they might get another championship or two. And their franchise, even with all the tax, even with the arena, all of that, they could probably walk away selling and making $1.5 billion.
Yeah, it'll be worth it.
You know, it's those are the moves. And by the way, they operate very smartly. They willing to take the business aspect of it and the financial risk while also trusting Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, et cetera, to run the ship correctly. Yep. And they kind of stay out of the way. All right. A lot more to get to in hour number two. Joe Burrow. We were told last week by a Cincinnati guy, Tyler Dragon, that this is fake news, but it's kind of heating up a little bit with Joe Burrow. And he had a quote in Fort Worth where he's training about maybe the future with the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll talk about that next to kick off hour number two, Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.